Hello and welcome to episode 11 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we have two members of the Stans No Tubes Elite Cyclocross team, Jake Wells and Dan Timmerman. We have a really nice conversation with both of them, talking a lot about their racing careers, but also about finding that work-life racing balance and how they can do that as pros, and also having to work on the side of that, and even in Dan's case, taking complete time off, retiring from the sport, doing some other things that he wanted to do, and then finding that balance to come back and be able to race again on the Stans No Tubes Elite team. One last piece of business before we get started. Our cyclocross book, Skills, Drills, and Bellyaches, makes a great gift. Holiday season just around the corner. You can get a copy for all of your cyclocross friends at cyclocrossbook.com. Also, we have these awesome spur cycle bells and toe spikes and lots of shirts and other stuff available at crosshairscycling.com/shop. Please take a look around. Pick up gifts for everyone, one-stop shopping, and you're done. All right, we talked to both Dan Timmerman and Jake Wells together on the phone. We start out talking to Jake, so let's do that right now.
Let's see, I started racing bikes probably 2002, somewhere around there. I was a runner in high school and college, and a distance, kind of mid-distance runner, you know, the mile and in cross country. And after school, I moved out to Wyoming, Jackson, Wyoming, and started riding mountain bikes out there just to kind of get out into the backcountry a little bit. And then when I moved to the Vail Valley here, I moved in 2001. And in the summer of 2002 is when I started racing bikes. And then started racing cross at the elite level. I think it was 2007 was when I started. That was the first year I went to nationals in Kansas City and started racing at the elite level.
Yeah. So, but even backing up from that, so really you found success first in mountain bike racing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Doing like cross country stuff like that. Did you ever race on the road as well?
Yeah, I did. I definitely did a little bit of road racing. You know, and when I was kind of coming up through the cross-country ranks, you know, we used to have a great series here in Colorado called the Mountain States Cup, and it was mostly in Colorado. There was, I think, one race down in Angel Fire, New Mexico, and that was a great series. And so, you know, just traveled around with my wife, and we would hit up those races. And then I think it was 2005, actually won the Expert National Championship out in Mammoth in the cross-country, and then as I started getting into, you know, moved up to, at that point they had semi-pro category. So moved up to semi-pro and then moving into the pro ranks, I did start doing some road racing, mostly as training, you know, just kind of would jump in some of the races in the front range of Colorado and just try to use those as opportunities to get longer efforts in. So kind of, again, kind of strategically moved my way up through the ranks. You know, I started out, and then as I got into like the Cat 3s, like, okay, this works pretty well for the training stimulus that I'm looking for as far as, you know, those 60-mile races or whatever. And then as I started, you know, being more competitive on the mountain bike, then I would race, you know, kind of move up through the ranks on the road to try to get, you know, the longer races. I did try to get an upgrade specifically to get ready for the Joe Martin stage race one year. Okay. I grew up in Arkansas and my parents are still there and my sister as well. And so I was going back to Arkansas to race the Joe Martin stage race. And I was like, I want to be a cat two. I needed to have a two, you know, so I was like, doing everything I could to get points to be a two for that race. But for the most part, it just kind of organically, you know, grew. I didn't really force it too much.
Yeah.
And I think back in like 2013, maybe, I rode for the Stans No Tubes road team. I kind of guest rode with those guys for a couple races the year before. And then the next year I rode for that team. So I got to do some cool races. Those guys at that point were based out of the East Coast and kind of the Southeast. They were really focusing on the Southeast series. So yeah, I got to travel around a little bit and do some road racing.
What brought you then from doing mountain bike with sort of your off-season training on the road to cyclocross? How did you enter that world?
No, I think it was probably around 2005. I started, maybe 2004, started racing some of the local races here. I mean, we only have a handful of local races here in our area because we're in the high country. So the snow starts flying and everybody starts, you know, shifting gears to skiing and that kind of thing. But I think it was probably 2004, 2005, started just dabbling a little bit in cross. And, you know, one of the guys I trained with was into cross and raced some cross races, and he was more of a road racer in the summer, and then he would race cross in the fall. And he's like, I mean, you'd probably really like this. You should try it out, you know. And I think he was basing that on my running background, which I don't know. I wouldn't say that my running background really helps a lot in cross. I mean, you're only off the bike for a few seconds at a time. But he was right. I definitely did enjoy it. It's the first time I raced a cross race. I was pretty much hooked.
When you started in cross, did they at least, you know, honor the, you know, one or two in a road and, you know, pro on the mountain bike? Where did you come in? Did they put you up into the elite race to start out with, or what were you doing in cross when you started?
I think I started as a three, because I think they mountain bike license didn't really matter for cross.
Okay.
For some reason, cross got kind of grouped into that road category more than anything. So,
right.
So I think I was a three on the road at that time. And so I think the first time I did a three race, or first cross race, like on the front range where I was actually, they actually had categories other than just like, you know, A, B, or C. I think it was a cat three. And I think I did a couple of those races. And then the way we do it in Colorado is, you know, at that point you race cat four, cat three, and then there's no really category for you after that. As you progress, you just race the open, you know.
So, right.
And it's just the open category for cat one, two, and then, you know, anybody else can really jump in there. You know, I jumped in the open race, and, you know, at that time, that was when, I don't know if you remember, like, Jonathan Baker.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you who the guys you were going up against were at that time.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan was, he used to race for Primus Mutri, and he raced for Vitamin Cottage for a long time. And, you know, he was kind of the Colorado local hero for sure. And even on the national scene, he was really well ranked. And he would, I think he and his wife, like, sold their house and moved to Belgium for a certain amount of time. And then, and he came back, and so I ended up actually being teammates with the guy later on in my career. But super interesting guy. But you know, like Colby Pierce, Matt Basoka. Whenever I think he was probably just racing for Velvet at that time, and then Brandon Dwight. So,
yeah, all the Boulder Cycles Four guys. Yeah,
yeah, Boulder Cycles. You know, Pete Weber. Those guys were real strong, you know, and influential whenever I was kind of coming through the ranks. But, you know, that was also kind of when we had the GP, and the GP would come in to Boulder, and so I would come out and, you know, watch those races, and then watch the elite race, you know, and then a couple of years later I was actually able to be in those races. So I think it was a unique opportunity to be able to be, you know, I didn't realize it really at the time, to be able to have that kind of that cyclocross hotbed in Boulder. I mean, when you think of cyclocross hotbeds, you think of, like, well, it's the Pacific Northwest, and there's the Northeast,
right,
and or the East Coast, but then to have Colorado as kind of a cross hotbed as well, at least get one of those stops on the GP schedule was pretty cool to be able to.
You know, in environment wise too, I personally have never been out there, but it seems like it's a unique style of, just from the, you know, the terrain and everything, it's a little different than you're getting anywhere else in the country.
Yeah, I think it is. I think that one, you have the altitude, of course, that you have to kind of contend with. Additionally, you know, you have the terrain and the climate. You know, I mean, you think of Colorado, you think, oh, it's going to be snowy and cold in the fall. But Boulder, the fact that they are on the east side of the mountain range, they don't necessarily get a lot of precipitation. It's pretty similar climate to, like, Bend, Oregon, you know?
Okay.
So it's kind of an arid climate. And we don't, I mean, if you race a full Colorado season and just race just the regional races in Colorado, you really don't get that much moisture, that many muddy races, you know, unless it snows and like 6 inches and then, you know, melts the next day and then it makes mud.
And what was your first experience with like a really muddy race?
I think my first experience was actually in a super snowy race. And it was, I think it was the state championships. And it was the first year that I raced the elite state championships or the open state championships. And I think Georgia Gould raced that race. I think she jumped in there with us. And because she was just racing the men's race,
right?
I may have been racing at the three. I can't remember exactly, but I feel like I was in that race. So yeah, it was definitely the open race, and Georgia was in it with me. And I remember they had like 6 inches of snow the night before, and this was up in Lyons, which is just a little bit north of Boulder. And I think the high for the weekend, or the whole day for the high, was like 11 degrees. And so there was essentially like a single track, you know, in the snow, and you know, the start took off and then it quickly funneled into this like maybe 18 inch wide single track of hard pack. And if you got off the line, then you were in the deep, you know, in the six or eight inch deep snow. So I remember like racing against Georgia, like trying to, you know, get in front of her before we got into some of the technical stuff. And I think that GHK was racing that race.
Oh, really?
I know he used to dabble in cross a little bit. And I think it came down to like him and maybe Pasoka or somebody for the win, you know. But that was probably my first real experience with that type of weather, you know. And I think snow and mud, they ride pretty similar, you know, like the drifting that you do through the mud and snow is pretty similar technique until you hit the brakes. Right. And then I think in mud, the tires react obviously a little differently in mud than on ice or snow. But you know, yeah, we had some muddy races, and I felt like at first because it was so foreign, like it wasn't a condition. I mean, if you consistently race your mountain bike in Colorado or in the Rocky Mountains, and even, you know, your cross bike, you really don't get the opportunity to ride in the mud that much. So it was definitely a learning curve there, you know. And then it wasn't something that really I excelled at, where it was riding in the mud. And then I seemed to kind of get it back for it, you know. I feel like now, I feel like that's definitely, if we can get muddy conditions, then, which unfortunately we haven't really had many muddy conditions yet this year, but then I definitely seem to have a little bit of an advantage over the other competitors. And I don't know if it's handling or technique, or if it's more of, it just brings the overall speed down and the race is just overall a little bit slower, which may suit me better. Or if it's just like the muscle tension, you know, of the lower cadence that kind of carries over from mountain biking as well, that maybe should be better. But yeah, I love racing in the mud. I was looking at some of the pictures from this weekend up in Washington, and that looked like a pretty fun race. I was kind of bummed to not be up there for that race.
Yeah, and so, you know, that love for the mud must have come in handy. You did a stint, what, in 2012 over in Europe?
That's right. Jeff Proctor invited me to come over in 2011.
Okay.
And I think I got sick like right after the Fort Collins GP, and I talked to Jeff on the phone, and it wasn't really in my plan that year to make it happen, and I didn't really have the budget to make it happen. So I passed on it in 2011, and then 2012, I kind of had that as a goal, and went over with Jeff Proctor and his group, you know, the Eurocross camp. I think we were over there for about 16 days, I think, and we did like something crazy, like 9 races in 16 days or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, got to ride some of those, you know, just quintessential mountain bike or cross courses, you know, that we've all seen on,
right,
on TV.
Yeah, and, absolutely. So this was like the Christmas time, was it for that, or was it?
Yeah. That was whenever they had the national championships were in Bend, and they were like the second week in December,
right,
or whatever,
yeah,
you know. So,
right.
So you pretty much went to nationals and then left like the next day for Europe, and came back on like the first or the second, you know, of the year. We were over there, yeah, for Christmas, and I can't remember exactly, like Deegan and I think Zolder were some of the races that I was able to do that are.
What do you think about that schedule? Do you think that it seems like maybe that even does that work better, or does it, if people think they're going to do worlds as well, does it get in the way having it back to December? I know there's always a debate if it should go back to December or if it should stay in January.
Yeah, I think it's a tough debate. You know, I think that it made sense to be middle of December, you know, kind of before the holidays, and then for 99% of the people that race cross in the U.S., you know, they can kind of say that their season's over and just enjoy the downtime and enjoy the holidays with their family. For the guys that are training through Worlds, you know, I don't know. It's not really that much of a benefit to have nationals in January, and then there's no races until Worlds anyway.
Right,
You know, so it's not like, I think for a lot of guys, it makes it even more tough because they've got to go. Like if you're really dying for Worlds, then you know you want to try to do those Christmas week or those Christmas races, you know, that block of racing then if you can, and go to Europe and spend that time there, and then you've got to get on a plane and come back for nationals, and then if you qualify for Worlds, you got to go back to Europe,
right?
You know, so or even for some of those later World Cups. So yeah, it's just a lot of time on the plane and going over the ocean. So. I don't know.
Yeah, because, you know, the other thing that always comes up is that, you know, kids that are still in college or high school or wherever else, that sort of gets in the way of their exams and all that kind of stuff. So it's a tough spot. So Dan, you still there?
I am here.
let's kind of do the same thing with you, just to get the background on where you started riding, where you know, grew up and got into the bike, and just sort of your ascension through the ranks, you know, what style you were starting on, mountain bike, I'm assuming, and then how you got into cross.
Yeah, I started on a mountain bike, basically been cycling in some form most of my life. I started back in 93, it was my first mountain bike race. I did basically a lot of the New York State Series races back then, you know, that was kind of the heyday of mountain biking when every state sort of had their own inclusive series that was well attended. And that's kind of where I did most of my racing in those days. And then, you know, I'd venture out to some of the bigger races like Mount Snow, and there used to be a route, like Trail 66. I can't remember if it was Trail 66 or Route 66. But anyway, it used to be a New England ski area based series that did like Killington and Mount Snow and some of the ski areas in Maine. And then I would do the nationals at Mount Snow and Seven Springs. And then, you know, around about the time when mountain biking started to sort of nosedive and road racing started to become the next big thing, I took a little bit of a hiatus and, you know, did some other stuff. I kind of worked full time and then I got sick of that and took off on a whole bunch of bike tours all over the place. And then it was right around that era where I think I did my first cross race, which would have been a local level New York State race. And shortly after that, I started just road racing for fun. And that all of a sudden started to become successful there, and did a bunch of time as an elite amateur, got a contract in 2007 with Kodak Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, and then raced for a Canadian team that would later become Spider-Tech this following year.
I got a quick question for you about the Sierra Nevada. Yeah. Did y'all have to use those Crank Brothers Quattro pedals?
On Sierra Nevada?
Yeah.
No. Okay. No, we were on time.
Okay. Because I have this set of, I don't know where I got them from, but I have this set of green and yellow Sierra Nevada, like when Crank Brothers decided to make road pedals, and I was like, man, that's just... So anyway, just as an aside.
That must have been... There was a Sierra Nevada Brewing Company team, and then there was an Ofoto team, and they merged and became Sierra Nevada.
Right.
Kodak. And then the year that I got signed on there was their final year. They lost their sponsors the end of that year and folded. And that year we were on Time pedals and Adidas shoes. It was before Mavic bought Adidas.
Gotcha.
Adidas shoes. So my first UCI level cross race was in 06. I sort of dabbled a little bit with cross then when I was on Fjord Fruta Elite Amateur Road Team. They also had a cross team that I did a little bit of racing with as well. And then through my road racing years, I did a little bit of cross, but I didn't really focus on it. It was just kind of like just sort of a way to do something in the fall. And then 2009 was the year that I signed up with Richard Sack and had a really successful year, and that was sort of time for me to take another hiatus.
Yeah, that was definitely a big story at the time. It was like 2010 when you were coming into 2010 and you weren't there and had retired from the sport. And what exactly went into that, and why did you decide to come back and start racing again?
Well, it was kind of like, you know, like I said, I've been bike racing in some form, has been part of my life for most of my life. And for me, I get to a point where I spend so much time and energy focusing on that, and I feel like I neglect other aspects of my life, or I just sort of fail to have the freedom to, you know, go down other paths that I wish I could go down. So it all sort of builds up over time, and I feel like I need a break.
So what was it? I mean, not to get too personal, but what was it out there that you really wanted to do that was freeing up this time to go do?
Well, you know, I guess at the time, it wasn't really anything in particular that was like, oh, I need to really do this, and then you just stop racing in order to do it. It's sort of like, I just feel like a whole bunch of events happen, and I feel like I could do that if I wasn't bike racing, and if I wasn't focusing on training so much. And, you know, the first time around when I called it quits, it was essentially ended up being a nomad on my bike, and I just took off and rode around, saw the country on my bike. And then the second time around, it was kind of a whole bunch of things. It was I got married, and we wanted to move out into the country, and I built a yurt, and we lived in a yurt for a little while, and then we bought our cabin and property, and I was doing a whole bunch of primitive skills stuff and teaching primitive skills for a little bit as well. So just like a whole bunch of things that I wanted to be a part of, and I felt like I needed to take a break from bike racing in order to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds amazing. Absolutely. All right. Yeah. So, and then, yeah. Then time goes on, and you decided you wanted to get back into it.
Yeah, I got to the point where, you know, I was doing all the things I wanted to be doing and felt like I had my life going in the direction I wanted it to go. And I felt like I could come back to bike racing and still keep my life going down that path and sort of fit bike racing back in. And, you know, I was able to do that. You know, I got to sort of make sure that, you know, I keep enough time to do these other things and make sure that bike racing isn't completely dominating my life.
So here's a question really for both of you all, but, you know, we'll start with Dan. Just the way that you all both talk about coming into racing, it's a pretty organic. Do you work with a coach?
I've worked with several coaches over the years, but currently I'm coaching myself just because I've been doing it for so long, and I've had experience in so many different aspects of it that I kind of know what to do, and I know that's kind of what I've had the most success when I've coached myself. I just feel like that just works best for me. And it's not like that I would consider having a coach again, because there are really some big advantages there that I see for myself. That one of them is the motivation side of things. It's easy to have, you know, somebody who just sends you something and says, you got to do this, and then, you know, you better do it, or you kind of have to answer to somebody. And so,
right. Yeah. That was always my thing with coaching, is that it was somebody to be accountable to.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And Jake, you do coach, right? Isn't that one of the, what you do as a business?
Yeah, it is. Yep. And I guess to answer your initial question, yeah, I currently do have a coach. I was working with the same coach for years, and it just started off as kind of a friendship and just kind of bouncing ideas off of each other. And then as I started progressing kind of through the ranks, it became more serious, and then the coaching relationship became more serious. And then I just started working with a new coach this year, just in April, just because I wanted to kind of change things up a little bit and make sure that, you know, I'm kind of getting to the twilight of my career. And I just want to make sure that I didn't kind of leave any stone unturned or leave anything, you know, on the table. But yes, and then I started coaching athletes, I think 2013, maybe 2012. I guess it's probably more realistic. And I currently have a business that we do, so it's called Storm Entertainment Studio. And so we do personal training, endurance coaching, and retool bike fitting. So, now I'm actually doing some coaching myself and working with mostly cyclists. I think occasionally I work with some runners and triathletes, but mostly cyclists. Same thing, same idea, you know. I mean, I find that I've tried kind of maybe coaching myself and right, just prescribing workouts, like, okay, here's, yeah, and I understand the idea of the progression and the periodization that I need to do. But whenever you, I think that's like you said, Bill, you know, I think that having that external stimulus of that motivation factor or that accountability of, well, I know someone's looking at this, and I know someone's analyzing the data, and I also know that they're going to be, you know, on me if I don't do the workout, you know. So,
and there's also the other side of that too, is that there's somebody there to tell you to stop, which I think is important,
right,
for people, you know, who do it like you all do at such a high level that you'll, you know, sometimes train until you, you know, can't race anymore.
Right. Yeah. Just to kind of pull the reins back a little bit and keep a bigger picture, bigger view of things. That definitely helps. Cause it's like you said, it's easy to get a little bit of tunnel vision with it. And, you know, especially when things aren't going great. It seems to be a little easier to do that. You know, when things are going great, you're like, yeah, this is working. So you just keep rolling. But another, you know, the results aren't coming or, you know, you're having a rough season, then, you know, it's a lot easier to say, well, I just need to do more.
Right.
And that's a lot of times not the answer. So
Jake, you mentioned heading into what you call the twilight of your career. Going through all of what you've done, what you've accomplished, coming to this now, how does that change what your goals are for racing and just sort of your outlook of going out there and racing every weekend?
Yeah, I mean, so it is a little bit different. You know, I think that, not that you're necessarily like, well, I'm just happy to be here, you know? I mean, but I think for me, because I never really had the opportunity to just go all in and be that kind of like factory racer, you know, that was like, this is what I do for a living.
Right. Weren't you
you know, always had,
didn't you do like contractor work too, or carpentry, or?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was, I did internal or like, interior trim, right? So we would do all the inside of the house,
yeah,
all the woodwork on the inside of the house. So yeah, we would set cabinets and we would case all the doors and do all the window.
But you were always a guy that had a job and then also was trying to be a professional racer at the same time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that was, you know, it was just the way
that it worked out for me. I was never at that point where I could just say, okay, well, I'm just going to just do this, you know, just race my bike and train. And, you know, not right or wrong. It's just, that's just the situation that I was in. So, you know, I felt like I kind of quickly got to a point of success in cyclocross. And then I've kind of plateaued there, you know? So, and that's why that goes back to what I was just mentioning about, you know, working with a new coach is that and maybe this is just every competitor's mentality, but I feel like there's still something in the tank, you know, some kind of percentage that I can, every year I go into the season with that mentality. Like, yeah, I know there's another, there's something left there, you know, that I'm not ready to just walk away from the sport. You know, I want to prove it to myself that there is another level there, you know, and then with my business, and it's just been refining things. You know, you start, you know, you're doing this essentially like manual labor, you know, you're lifting, you know, cabinets and, you know, doing all this beam work and stuff over your head all day. And then you go out and get on the bike after work. And then you've got family on top of that. So, and then, you know, you just start refining it. Like, okay, well, hey, you know, what I'm really passionate about is not, you know, I'm not buying like Fine Woodworker magazine, you know, I'm into cycling and racing and the physiology behind it and the science behind it. So then I started getting more into that. I started doing personal training and coaching and, you know, put the carpentry stuff behind me, and then decided to open my own studio and get into that aspect of it. So you're adding all that stuff in there, you know, and it's just a lot. It's a lot of stress, and it's a lot on your plate throughout the day. But then you get that fire under control, you know, and then you're like, okay, yeah, I've got this kind of dialed, you know. And now, you know, my wife and daughter and you know, the people that I work with at the studio, we've all got it, and even my clients, you know, we've all kind of got it figured out. You know, we've got the routine. We know that, you know, whenever like September comes around, it's, you know, I'm not around as much, and I'm focusing more on me. And then the other, you know, 8 months of the year, then I'm just a little bit more relaxed and can kind of shift my focus elsewhere. So you know, you do get it a little bit more and more refined, and I feel like that's probably part of it as well. Like in the back of my mind, I feel like, yeah, I still have something to learn here, and I feel like as long as you're still learning out on the course, then, you know, you're still contributing, or at least I'm still finding value in it, you know, and still pushing myself. And like up to this point this season, I haven't been having good results that I'm used to getting and having the season that I'm used to having. But, and it's tough, you know, it's definitely a mental challenge to stay up and stay positive in those situations, but there's still something to be learned, you know. And I think that can be, it's hard to see that when you're so close to it, but looking back, even now that I've been home for a week after being in Louisville, you know, I can see some of the things that I've been able to learn there, and hoping to be able to, you know, pass that on to clients and things, you know, down the road.
And you're also, on top of that, you're like, you are the team manager for this, for the No Tubes team.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a new, I guess, new position for me this year. And I wouldn't say that it's easy, but, you know, working with Dan and Allie and the crew that we have, the sponsors, you know, the relationships that we have, it makes it pretty, pretty easy. You know, like Dan's super, super easygoing. Allie's super easygoing. So, you know, everybody takes it serious and is out there to maximize, you know, the opportunity. But at the same time, being my first year running, like managing the team, it's been a pretty positive experience so far.
So, Dan, what are you looking to get out of this season? You had a strong start to the season and sort of in there in that top 10 area. What are really your goals?
My goals were to hit the early season pretty fast, which I did. But then I got sick at Gloucester, and whenever I get a cold or get sick, it sort of hits me pretty hard, and I might get over the cold in a few days, but my fitness level seems to suffer for quite a while, and I still feel like I'm kind of digging out of that a little bit. And really since then, everything has been really hit or miss. I've been either completely off or all of a sudden just feeling sort of like myself again. So my goals at this point in the season are sort of to, since November is kind of a bit of a slow month for us, we've got a couple of weekends off, and my plan is to take that time and try to recover and recuperate and get back on track, hit the last few races here in November going okay, and then try to focus on doing as well as I can for Tennessee and Nationals.
Well, again, we loved having you in D.C. for DCCX, and that was one of those races that seemed like you were doing pretty well, had a little bad luck with some, wasn't it some course tape? Was it Sunday? Because you were right in the hunt and then fell back a little bit. It looked like you were having a good race there.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to see you afterwards. I want to say that was a great race. I loved the course. But yeah, I was on the last lap on Saturday. I was in the lead and crashed. And then Sunday,
that's what it was, yeah.
And then Sunday I got caught up in the course tape in my own fault, but I got in the course tape, and I think I got a good 30 yards of it wrapped in my cassette. And so, yeah, I ended up fourth both days. So, yeah, bad luck, also feeling a bit flat. And the same thing with New Jersey the weekend before, just, you know, not terrible, but just feeling a little bit flat. So, kind of been a whole bunch of races kind of like that. Not quite sure what's behind it. You know, obviously getting sick at Gloucester is definitely a factor. Definitely also considering, you know, what my summer racing and how much that affects how I'm feeling now. I mean, I could have been going a little bit too hot during some of the mountain bike races, mm-hmm. and feeling a little bit of a fade now because of that. But you know, I'm just trying to analyze what's going on and try to get back on track.
Right, so it's really, so main goal now is to have a good showing in Asheville for Nationals.
Yeah, I'd like to have a good race in Iowa City as well.
Sure.
It's a matter of whether I can get things back on track by then or not.
So one of the things I do want to touch on, just since, you know, you all are this Stan's No Tubes team, and that means you're racing on tubeless wheels, which is still one of those things that people love to debate, along with, you know, disc versus canny brakes and all the other things that cyclocross seems obsessed with. Just and, you know, either Jake or Dan, give me a little rundown with what it is like going from tubulars to racing tubeless, and what the experience has been.
Well, I think Dan probably should answer that, you know, because I think I've been on tubeless for probably 5 years now, so it's honestly been a few years since I've raced or ridden tubeless. So Dan was on tubeless last year, so Dan, if you want to...
Yeah, most of my cross experience prior to this has been tubular, although I would do some training and off-season stuff on tubeless cyclocross stuff, so I've had experience with it prior to this, but most of my racing would be on tubular. And it is really one of the main reasons why I made the switch to the team is because I am a big fan of the technology. I think that if you have the right rim and tire combination, you're essentially, all of the issues that everybody focuses on with tubeless, they're no longer an issue. The burping issues of many years ago, those are sort of mitigated by new rim designs, some new tire technology. And there's arguments out there about, you know, how tubular is more supple. I actually feel like the setup that we quite often ride is actually more supple than most of the tubulars that I've ridden. Long story short, I think that tubeless technology in its current state is essentially can achieve the same exact thing, same ride quality as a tubular with a higher level of convenience for average Joe.
Anything you want to add to that, Jake?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of going along the same lines that what Dan was saying, and kind of like I mentioned, you know, like I was on the No Tubes team the first year that they had a cross team. And so, you know, we were on, you know, Canty brakes and essentially road tubeless wheels. And that was like the Alpha 340s, you know. And since then, you know, every year we've made refinements, and that's what I think I enjoy the most about the relationships that we have with the partnerships with our sponsors and the brands that we get to work with. In No Cheaps being the number, you know, the one that we've been working with the longest, is that they're so it's a smaller company, you know, it's family, it's essentially you're very much of a family feel to it when you're sitting down and talking with the engineers and the owners and everybody involved. So, and that feedback that you give them, you know, you get to see that come to reality, you know. So the feedback that we gave them about the 340 and then ultimately the Alpha 400, and then how whenever the transition to disc came out, you know, that opened up the window a little bit more about our options for wheel selection. And you know, we've been on the Valor, which is essentially a 29er, you know, mountain bike wheel. We've been on that, but on that, those wheels, you know, we were on, I think, prototypes 2 years ago for that wheel for cross season. And you know, now they just came out with like their new Neo Hub. And then, so I think like Dan was saying is that, you know, the technology is just progressing. And sometimes you can get into this debate of is it industry driven or is it, is it consumer driven? And is it a solution to a problem that doesn't really exist? But I think as far as the world of tubeless goes, you know, like Dan was saying, it's so much more simple, you know, than, I mean, I went to Canada earlier this year and I flew with one bike and two sets of wheels and like four pairs of tires, you know, and was able to swap out tires super easy just depending on what the terrain was going to do. And it rained a lot on Friday and the course was super muddy. And then, so, you know, if we would have raced on Friday night or even Saturday morning, then we would definitely have run the quicker the mud tire, but it dried out pretty quickly. And you know, so then I swapped tires, you know, in the hotel room and was able to just go to my more general conditions tire. And you know, it, I don't have to travel with like three sets of wheels,
right?
You know, or in the case of the team, you know, we don't have to have a truck full of wheels. You know, everybody has essentially like two pair of wheels and for the A bike and the B bike. And then we have a backup set that we have for the pits, and we just swap out tires as we need to. And, you know, it just gives you a little bit, it's a lot less preparation that you have to do. You know, you don't have to have all these, you know, 2 month sets ready and a general conditions set ready. And then a dry conditions, you know, grass or like a file tread ready. So, you know, which is all fine and great if you're, you know, if you're on a team and they've got the budget for it, and you know, yeah, you might as well, you know, if that's the relationship that you have and those opportunities are there for you, great. But for, you know, like Dan said, the general masses, like, you know, it's not and that's what we're trying to, you know, let people understand, is that it's not a performance disadvantage to be on a tubeless setup. It's just more simple and less expensive. Like, we're working with No Tubes constantly about modifying rim designs because the impact that, you know, an obstacle like a rock or a sharp edge or that you would see in a mountain bike race with a higher volume tire is completely different whenever you have a narrower tire or a lower volume tire that can cross. So, we're working with Kenda constantly to try to come up with different tire options and tread designs and refine that product, and then also working with No Tubes, you know. So it's, to me, that's super rewarding. You have to be able to give feedback to a brand and see that product, you know, come to the marketplace is super rewarding.
So just to finish off, what's been the highlight so far of the season, or something, some memorable occurrence that happened on in one of these races that really sticks out to you as sort of the story that you would take home, at least so far from this year, if anything?
I don't know, Darren, what do you think? You have a memorable moment so far?
Well, I mean, personally, in the races, it's being able to participate in Cross Vegas World Cup. Even though I didn't do all that well, it was great to be able to do that. You know, success is early in the season. I don't know, the team has just meshed really well and seemed to have a really good time every race. I don't know if there's a specific moment or not.
Anything to add, Jake?
We do have some Christmas cards. We do have some Christmas cards that are going to be coming out pretty soon. And I think that we took those pictures last weekend in Louisville, and that was a pretty funny event. Yeah, so I think having Allie Stocker on the team, yeah, she brings a lot of fun to the vibe of the team. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. The current band is super easy to work with, and everybody's pretty laid back. And, you know, we've got Drew Eschrick is a mechanic. And so, you know, we end up spending a lot of time together throughout the season and traveling on the road and everything. But, you know, for me, as the team manager, it's really exciting, of course, to see whenever you have success, you know, on the track and Dan and Allie. And I feel like I've had, you know, some decent results so far this year as well. And I think that everybody's kind of pulling their weight when it comes to that, you know, the results. But the way that the team has gelled has been really cool to be a part of and just how good everybody gets along. So,
all right, guys, thank you so much for talking to me today and being on Crosshairs Radio. And we look forward to following your results once you all get back to racing again.
Hey, thanks, Bill.
All right, and there you have it. Thanks to Jake and also to Dan for joining us on Crosshairs Radio this week. Thank you for listening. Once again, cyclocrossbook.com. Pick up a copy of Skills, Drills, and Bellyaches. Also, rate and review us on iTunes. Follow along at CX Hairs and on Instagram. And we will see you next week for episode 12.